BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan MacLeod. It's our first Tech Central podcast interview for 2018, and I'm very pleased to be with longtime friend Mark Walker to discuss ICT in Africa, outside of South Africa, the size of the opportunity, and the growth prospects in key African markets. Mark is a veteran, not to say he's old, of the IT sector and has immense knowledge of the space. He's now Associate Vice President at International Data Corporation. Mark, thanks very much for talking to us today.
Thank you very much, Duncan. It's great to be here, and it's good to see old friends. The only thing that's happening is we all seem to be getting grayer and wider, which is a bit of a problem.
It's the only inevitable thing, isn't it?
It is, death and taxes almost.
So Mark is joined by a friend of this podcast, John. We had a long conversation on the show last year. John Tullett is Research Manager for IT Services at IDC. John, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks, Duncan. Great to be with you.
So, Mark, let me start with you. You spend a considerable amount of time traveling up and down Africa, consulting to clients. Talk us through some of the major trends that you're seeing on the African continent, and which markets have you particularly excited?
Right, Duncan. I think there's a lot happening in Africa. There's always the two stories that go around, Africa, the prosperous and brimming with opportunity. And then the other one is the story of Africa, the hopeless case. And technology is the one thing that cuts through the nonsense, if you like. And what we're seeing a lot of in Africa is very, very quick uptake, a very strong uptake of technology and newer technologies especially. Years ago, you'll remember the whole digital divide discussion and then the leapfrog discussion. And in many instances, the leapfrog discussion was premature. In that the technology wasn't quite there yet. We didn't have the connectivity. We didn't have the speed of access or the universal access that we're starting to enjoy today. So a lot of those things weren't in place yet. And now we're finally getting to the point with fourth platform technologies, which is cloud, mobile, analytics, and social media. We're starting to get to a point where these things can actually actualize. And bottom line is, it starts with uplifting the consumer, the people that actually need technology. So we're seeing big strides happening, for instance, in the retail space. We've seen governments using technology to provide e-services, especially around healthcare and education, and also in terms of managing the population. We see a lot of those kind of things coming through a lot more prevalence now. Of course, there are some downsides. If Nigeria, the economic meltdown, with incidents with MTN, this has caused a lot of a slowdown in that industry. But nonetheless, it's looking still at Nigeria. Innovations such as Jumia, which is a great retail platform, that came out of Nigeria. It's a lot of innovation and coming up with great ideas, great startups. We're starting to see a flow of venture capital into the continent now, which is more regular, if I can put it that way, more predictable. And companies are starting to take bets on Africa, and I think that augurs well for the future.
And what sort of companies are we talking about here? Are these South African companies that are expanding on the continent, or are you finding European and American investors coming in, or is it a mix of the two?
It's a mix of the two. A lot of the South African tech companies tend to take a follow attitude. So in the financial services sector, a large bank will be operating across Africa, East and West Africa, for instance, and their technology providers will follow them where they you know, establish roots in Africa and expand upon them to make the operation so much more efficient and so on. You know, so we see a lot of that happening. In terms of the overall market, you know, market for technology in Africa, there's the US and Europe are definitely still strong players, but increasingly we see the Chinese taking a leadership position. Companies like Huawei, companies like ZTE, very, very involved. And the difference between them is it would appear the level of commitment that they have to actually investing hard cash and hard resources in these regions. My first trip up into Africa, one of my first trips was back in the late 1990s. And I remember seeing gentlemen from Chinese companies at some very small and remote locations. So the investment has been happening since then, you know, the assessment of the risk and the actual putting down of resources. And I think that sets the Chinese apart, and I think they invest, and that's the big difference.
John, maybe I can bring you in here. There's been a lot of investment in telecommunications infrastructure on the continent over the last 5 or 10 years. 10 years ago, there was virtually no submarine cable infrastructure circling the continent. There was nothing on the east coast of Africa. Seacom, EasyCam, we've got new cables going up the west coast. Companies like Liquid Telecom have invested extensively in country and fiber infrastructure between countries. To what extent has that uplifted or provided a base for investment on the continent?
Well, it's a tremendous factor. It's kind of a truism which is often overstated, the link between telecoms investment and GDP. And it doesn't quite correlate to the degree that maybe people used to think it did, but it is still tremendously empowering at every level. So at a grassroots level, you've got the population having access to what we might see as relatively basic telecommunication services. It's still tremendously empowering, and that's what gave us services like M-Pesa in East Africa. At an enterprise level, we have access to both a more sophisticated user base and marketplace, a skills base, and also access now to emerging technologies. So services like cloud, being able to access basically the same services that your international counterparts would be able to, whereas in the past it was incredibly difficult. Many of the technical barriers have effectively been removed with the rise of the international connectivity. Now it's, you know, there are more process barriers, social barriers, so concerns about privacy and security, for example, or in many parts of Africa, there's still that lingering desire to keep IT infrastructure under direct control. So there's, you know, these are barriers that we're breaking down, but more and more the discussion around technology strategy and business strategy is starting to look sophisticated, mature. Like Mark said, there's that dichotomy of opinion around Africa, whether it's, you know, land of opportunity or kind of a basket case. I think in business models, we're maturing very quickly, and that's driving a lot of those opportunities.
It's often said that Africa is a mobile-first continent, and the penetration of mobile, while not reaching emerged or first-world country level yet, is quite remarkable. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, very few people had access to the internet, and now people, even if it's through a basic 2G or 3G connection, have access. But can mobile be a basis for innovation? I mean, I think about developers in Silicon Valley. They're working on Macs, on desktops. They're building applications on traditional computers. In Africa, people are largely stuck with a mobile device in their pocket. And if they want to innovate and develop around that, is it really a platform that you can use to build on?
So 100% yes. And I think there's a couple of misconceptions that you need to break down when you're thinking about this space. So First is that absolutely if all you have is a mobile device, then you need to do things differently. But that's just an engineering challenge,
right?
And we absolutely can. And that's why you come up with clever mobile solutions to problems, whether that's mHealth or whether that's mobile financial services, whatever it may be. But also, if you look at the current generation of applications, enterprise applications coming out of Silicon Valley, they are almost universally aping mobile interfaces because that is the interface that most end users are now accustomed to. So a lot of the design paradigms, a lot of the use of interface real estate, or the kind of the process flow that you go through, it's all designed mobile first, even when you're using it on a desktop browser or a standalone application. So the being mobile first, I don't really see as much of an impediment. Mm-hmm. It certainly changes the it changes your starting point, but I don't think it's much of a barrier.
Okay, Mark, you as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you travel extensively in Africa. How many markets in Africa have you actually been in now?
Good question. Lost count somewhere along the way. There's 54 countries. I think I've been in about 20 odd.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
More or less.
Okay.
Again, it's you'd love to go to some of the more exotic locations.
Yeah.
But, Mauritius. Mauritius, I've been to. Reunion, yes. Seychelles, thank you. But, you know, so one would tend to try, but places like where there is, believe it or not, some innovation, places like Sudan.
Oh, really?
And places like Mali. Mm-hmm. Central African Republic has recently received a grant from African Development Bank for, I think it was around, how much was it? It was around $8.7 million. So even places like that, you're starting to see a development, mm-hmm. and you know things are happening in Africa.
Yeah.
And you'll remember just picking up the conversation you've had with John about the undersea cables. Back in the day, there was the undersea cable ringing Africa. And then there was a discussion of what I think it was ImojaNet, which was the terrestrial fiber network. And, you know, that we're getting to a point where we're starting to see this progress being made. And I think that's very exciting.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd imagine that we're seeing interesting things happening in the big markets, obviously South mm-hmm. Africa, Nigeria, and Kenya are the three biggest markets in sub-Saharan Africa. But are there markets outside of that are particularly interesting to you? I mean, I keep hearing interesting noises coming out of Ethiopia, for example. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a lot of interesting things happening there. Have you been to Ethiopia?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Tell us what's happening on the ground there.
Ethiopia is very interesting. Mm-hmm. The problem in Ethiopia is government regulation.
Okay.
So, and on multiple fronts. So, on the one hand, you can't use Skype unless you're in your hotel room in Ethiopia. So there's a clampdown on communication externally. So that limits growth, if you like. That said, that also encourages strong levels of innovation internally in the country to overcome those barriers, if I can put it that way. So we're seeing, you know, there's a level of innovation. There's also a large Ethiopian diaspora, which brings technology back into Ethiopia, which is quite interesting. The other challenge from a commercial or a business point of view is how do you do business in Ethiopia? You know, it's quite a cumbersome process. It's difficult to do business or do business out of Ethiopia if you're an international. If you're a South African company, it's quite difficult to set up and run a technology mm-hmm. business. In terms of innovation, you know, I think Ethiopia's got a lot to offer and a lot of opportunity. You know, consider there's one telco.
Right.
And one telco that runs everything. You know, if you're a technology equipment supplier or telco equipment supplier or services provider, what a market. You know, there's a great opportunity there. So if you can overcome the challenges, there's opportunity in Ethiopia. Other countries that are interesting, Tanzania. Mm-hmm. Some interesting things happening in Tanzania and also places like Ghana, the second tier, if you'd like. North Africa is also interesting, but as you know, I'm assuming that mostly South African audience here, there's challenges in not only physically getting there.
Yeah.
You're going to fly via Dubai or Qatar or Paris to get there, to some of the North African destinations. And then there's a language problem. Most South Africans are not trilingual. Mm-hmm. So, you know, French is the language of business in a lot of these places. Other interesting area is Egypt. We're seeing quite a lot of development happening in Egypt again.
They went through a terrible time with the political situation.
Exactly. It looks like there's a bit of a comeback now. Slow, but sustained. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think Egypt is getting interesting. But again, Egypt is seen, although it's part of Africa and undoubtedly, it's seen very much as part of the Middle East.
Mm.
And I think a lot of the proximity of the Middle East influences a lot of the business that happens in Egypt.
Yeah. Yeah, so. You touched briefly on the startup ecosystem and the number of venture capital investments rising across sub-Saharan Africa over the last year. To what extent are we seeing innovation on the continent? Obviously, everyone talks about M-Pesa in Kenya as being this example of how you can transform an industry, mm-hmm. and it's a homegrown African innovation. Mm-hmm. But beyond the M-Pesa example, are we seeing some really interesting homegrown African technologies being developed in places like Nigeria, places like Kenya, other than M-Pesa, Tanzania, etc.?
Some interesting stuff there. You know, if we look at like Jumia, which I mentioned earlier,
yeah.
And there's a similar, the name escapes me right now, but there's a similar retail offering in Kenya. So there is that innovation happening, and there's also funding for innovation, and there's a lot of hubs, if you like, innovation hubs that have been set up in the rest of Africa, IA being the classic example, things like BRCK, BRIC, that have originated in Africa and so on. What I'm seeing that's interesting, though, is there's a subcurrent or a sub-debate starting to emerge where guys are saying, well, you know, Uber's great, but Taxify can be better, okay? So you're seeing a lot of, you can almost call it Me Too type stuff, which refines an international product, if you like, for a local market. So there's either technology refinement or a better accommodation of the technology to suit local user requirements. So the use case becomes very prevalent. I've seen some interesting things in Kenya where the guys are digitizing taxi routes and putting it, making it available on your mobile phone. So you'll be, it's not as good as Switzerland just yet in terms of the predictability of when your taxi is going to arrive, but you know what the routes are, you know what the fares are. And it just gives a better way of traveling. So from an IoT point of view, I think there's a lot of development in the African space. It's going to continue going.
Right. John, let me bring you in here. We're looking at a lot of technology hubs, if I can call them that. Kenya has got several of them. I know there are a few in Nigeria. South Africa has some hubs as well. To foster innovation on the continent, how important are those hubs, and what else can be done to encourage perhaps young developers, young geeks to get involved and to start to develop and come up with startup companies and that sort of thing? Are they facing a unique set of challenges relative to their peers in North America and Europe?
I don't know if the challenges are unique, but we're not tackling them the same way, and in some cases that is a problem. So we have no shortage of geeks, mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. We're not short of talent. There's plenty of innovation. There's an endless supply of good ideas out there. And in Africa, it tends to be consolidated around kind of those big urban areas, but there's also plenty of smart projects happening in agriculture and mining and service delivery and that kind of thing. Probably the biggest disconnect right now, though, is that we're not turning startup ideas into startup businesses. And a startup business is a very different beast. And this is something which the Silicon Valley community in particular deeply understands now. You know, when you're a startup, you're starting up with an end in mind. There's an exit strategy. You've got a plan. You have a strategy. You get funding. It's to get you to that end point. You're not a startup because you're looking for a lifelong career. And I think that's what we're not getting over at the moment, is we're not turning these guys with really good ideas, and the hubs are bringing them together, and we're doing the skills transfer and education and all that kind of thing. We're not producing viable businesses. And that's something we need to tackle. It's hard. It's comparatively easy in retrospect to give people technical skills and to give them access to technology and to bring them together and get them to build cute prototypes. Mm-hmm. It's considerably harder to get them to market with a business. That requires deep understanding of the business landscape, the government regulations, the operating environment, all that kind of thing. That is a challenge. So if there's one thing I'd like to see change in the startup field across Africa, it would be that. It'd be more emphasis on the business process.
Right, right. And I would imagine, I mean, Silicon Valley has got this fine-tuned, it's a fine-tuned really machine. How do we do that in Africa? I mean, Stellenbosch is a very good example, and perhaps the wider Cape Town area is a good example. There's a university, two universities, a very good computer science department at Stellenbosch, and the town of Stellenbosch has become a bit of an incubator of startups, and there's an amazing number of tech startups that come out of that relatively small town.
Yep.
Can that be replicated elsewhere in Africa? Are there universities elsewhere in Africa, university towns elsewhere in Africa and other countries where we could see a similar sort of ecosystem start to emerge?
There definitely are, and it is starting to happen. And part of it is happening simply because VCs, angel investors, and accelerators don't want to get into a project that doesn't have that kind of exit in mind. Right? Mm. So they are looking for viable businesses, not just good ideas. You know, good ideas are there to be stolen and replicated. Good businesses are there to be invested in. So it is happening. The change is happening. Places like Stellenbosch are a really good example of it, but it's not the only one. So Kenya, for example, is actually being quite proactive about this and trying to put that sort of business safety net in place to really help businesses emerge and grow. So it is happening, but it's more of a cultural shift than just an architectural one. Mm. So you can't just put the resource in place and expect it to be used. It really needs to be fostered and nurtured. Once it starts to take root, though, like in Stellenbosch, where the culture starts to take root, now there's that expectation. If I'm a tech startup in Stellenbosch, I have an idea. I'm surrounded by people who've built businesses. That's what I'm going to be doing. I'm not just a geek with a good idea. Yeah, I'm getting investment. I've got a business plan. I have an exit strategy. I have support. I have the resources that I need. So, and straight away that starts to take root, and it will change the way we do business. So it's not that we need to start at, you know, step one and build an entire business environment. Yeah, it change happens quickly. So I'm optimistic that we will get it right. But it's not going to be universal, right? So it will happen differently in every town, in every market, in every country.
You mentioned, Mark, you mentioned regulation in Africa and government policy. The Ethiopian example, for example, where there's still a monopoly telecommunications operator. What more could governments be doing to foster the tech ecosystem, particularly from a startup perspective?
Duncan, I think there's a lot of, if you take Rwanda as a case in point.
Yeah.
You know, you almost, if you wanted a successful technology environment, you've got to look at it from the end, from end to end. So, you know, what is the business outcome? What are the inputs like from the university influence? Like in Kenya, for instance, you've got the iHub, you've got Strathmore University, private university, as well as University of Kenya getting involved. You've got the business environment getting involved. And very importantly, you've got government through the Kenya ICT Authority specifically targeting investment into these areas. So, you know, you've got to look at all these dimensions and try and manage them so they're all working, you know, moving in the same direction. Problem in any government is politics. You know, people will have different agendas, and they'll be driving different agendas to suit outcomes that they're trying to influence. And technology is obviously a very big and an increasingly important lever in that discussion. In regulation, in terms of South Africa, we know we've got the national technology plans. A lot of African countries also have national technology plans specifically, or some development plans that talk to technology. And I think, you know, again, many African countries, Tanzania's got it, Nigeria's got it. And it's a case of like dusting them off and putting them back into the agenda. I think oftentimes technology, we've seen in South Africa, gets reduced to two lines in the national budget. Mm. You know, it should be taking a far greater position there. And when it starts talking to the political economy, the regulation should support growth on that.
Okay, I want to talk a bit later about the politics in South Africa and what that might mean for the sector. But, I was interested in the last year or two. We've seen some major U.S. tech company CEOs coming to Africa. Sundar Pichai visited Nigeria. Mark Zuckerberg, I think, also went to Nigeria and to Kenya. Neither of them came to South Africa. What was your interpretation of that?
Duncan, very, very interesting question. You know, if you look at the South African business environment,
yeah,
it's difficult to get in. South African business environment, it's easy to start a business, easy to do business, but you've got to get into the business ecosystem. And I think the ecosystem in South Africa has got higher barriers to entry than, for instance, Nigeria or Kenya.
Why is that? Is it because it's more competitive?
It could be about competition, or it could be about monopolization.
Okay.
You know, I think there's a strong influence of large corporate in South Africa, in the marketplace, and there's a strong desire to, if you see a successful independent, to acquire it and make it part of a large corporate. Whereas in Nigeria and East Africa, you know, you see less of that, and there's more independence of operations, I suppose. Mm. Also, if you look at, follow the money, I suppose, and see where aid comes from. Kenya, East Africa, big. There's a large U.S. presence in there, economically, politically, and militarily. Similarly, in Nigeria, so there's an entrenched interest from, and I'm just using the U.S. as an example here, an entrenched interest in that area already as it exists. And I think the final one is just proximity. You know, and South Africa's also, it's the alignment that South Africa has decided to take from a political perspective at the UN and so on. I think it makes us friends in certain places and it alienates others. So we need to, you know, keep that in mind. And I think investors will be looking at that as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. So what is the opportunity for South African ICT companies looking at Africa? Who's playing big on the continent at the moment? I mean, Certainly, companies like Dimension Data, Internet Solutions, Telkom has pulled back from the continent. But Business Connection obviously has a number of operations there. The mobile operators are obviously huge investors on the continent, particularly MTN. What are the opportunities for South African headquartered ICT companies as you see them?
Duncan, I think I'm going to pull John in on this one as well, because sure. I know he's got some good ideas on this. But generally, you know, I think there's in the if I look in historically, it's been a case of where the opportunities presented and the competition levels have been low. There's been, you know, quick expansion by especially the telco and the telco community, and then in the, from a for the rest of the guys, Dimension Datas and so on, IS and those guys, they've gone in there opportunistically with on the back of some of their existing clients, and followed them in. Going forward, you know, I think it's there's got to be a bit of a sea change. There's more expectation on how do you get to actually make successful business up there. And I don't know if John wants to add something on this. There's some areas there that I think he's also got some interest in.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, the telcos, the connectivity businesses are the easy one, right? It's kind of an obvious
don't tell MTN.
Expansion market. Well, no, those are the obvious businesses which expand. So MTN is an example, Internet Solutions another. I think, like Mark said, there is a bit of a sea change coming. So part of the rapid expansion of South African businesses into Africa has started to stall a bit. You know, we've seen markets proving more difficult. So West Africa is a really good example of that. I've seen some South African businesses starting to pull back. Maybe they expected a couple of things to be different. They expected it to be easier to do business, and in particular, they expected to be able to do business in a South African way. Mm-hmm. And that's it's the classic foreigner mistake in Africa, right? 54 countries, there are 54 different countries, and different cultures, different businesses, different markets. So, we've seen friction. In particular, in spaces like outsourcing and systems integration, CIOs really like to be doing business with somebody they know, somebody who's on the ground, somebody who's present, somebody they can call into their office and have a conversation in their language of choice, somebody who understands the culture. And you can't just enforce European or American or South African business model into those markets. It just doesn't work like that. So we're starting to see a change in the way people operate, far more network-based, much more aligned with channels and partners to come to market. So we're still seeing business being driven out of South Africa, but in a different approach, so different style. And that has meant that some of the sort of on the ground operations are contracting a bit while they do that. So more emphasis on building up a channel, less on having, you know, South African boots on the ground.
So what are the opportunities specifically? You mentioned the mobile operators have gone in there. That was the obvious first target. But once the infrastructure is built, or the infrastructure begins to be built, there are opportunities that naturally appear on top of that. You mentioned cloud computing. But, you know, there's the whole gamut of IT services that can be provided to both consumers and businesses.
Yep.
We're seeing that connectivity infrastructure being built, especially in key markets. Are we seeing a follow-up of investment in other areas like cloud, more traditional IT services, et cetera?
Yeah, for sure. So your installation and support services are still a good growth area, where in more developed parts of the world, it's much harder work. So, yeah, hardware and software installation and support, for example, those are still growth areas on this continent. Outsourcing is growing well. Hosting is a very strong growth market. Cloud is growing, but it is still relatively small in many countries. Mm. So, pretty high growth, lots of interest, but we're not seeing a massive realignment of spend into the cloud yet.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the investment difficulties. John, you have the mic, so I'll direct this question to you. Many markets in Africa we know have unreliable electricity supply. How much of a challenge is that in developing ICT ecosystems? And related to that, what about renewables, solar energy, etc.? Can that actually lift the continent up and provide it with that reliable source of power that it needs?
Okay, so first of all, I don't personally buy the argument that an unreliable energy supply is a hindrance. It's an engineering problem. It raises your cost, that's all. Mm-hmm. We've had it in South Africa. We've been there, right? Yeah. We may get there again if Eskom runs out of money. So these are things we deal with. And you put in generators, you put in diesel storage tanks, you put in battery backup. It can be done. It just raises the cost. So for a long time, that was part of the reason why cloud providers didn't want to establish infrastructure in this country. You had to invest very heavily in backup power, especially in an environment where you've only got a single supplier, and to get to tier four, you have to have separate supply.
Yeah.
So yeah, these are factors that you've just got to take into account when you're going into a market. In terms of renewables, so yeah, it helps with the energy mix, but you've got to remember, if the problem is on your transmission network, then sticking renewables on the end of the same transmission network doesn't actually help all that much. Mm. So it can help in terms of raising the supply. But how that actually manifests will vary a great deal from place to place. Certainly South Africa is making good strides in that, and I'd like to see more of it. But right now, it's not really a priority from an investment point of view in many countries. They're really just more focused on stabilizing the energy supply.
Before we move on to South Africa, Mark, let me ask you about one other market that I'm particularly interested in Africa, and there's been quite a bit of change there over the last year or two, and that's Angola. Have you traveled to that market? Have you got a feel for it?
Angola is an interesting place.
Yeah.
It's very expensive to do business. Things are changing there very rapidly at the moment, and the political environment is changing.
Mm.
We're waiting with bated breath to see what does that actually mean for technology and technology uptake and supply in Angola.
There's a new president in Angola.
Correct.
The former president's daughter had huge
influence
over government, over business, etc. And she appears to be being sidelined.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Is there an investment opportunity waiting to be opened up here?
I think there is an investment opportunity. How that is used is going to be a good question.
Yeah.
Traditionally, a lot of business that South Africa has tried to do into Angola has been fairly successful. Look at breweries and a couple of these the large corporates, they've been fairly successful. But at the end of the day, a lot of the influence is still exerted from Portugal. So you'll see a lot of Portuguese companies going into Angola, and they might enjoy the fruits of the opportunity more than a South African company would.
Mm.
Language issue, by all means, way of doing business is for more, it aligns better to a Portuguese business model. So I think, you know, does that mean there's no opportunity for South Africans? Absolutely not. You know, I think there is opportunity to be carved out there. I know some of the big software vendors are renewing efforts into Angola, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and you know, putting boots on the ground and, you know, taking active interest in that market. Obviously, it's a rich market; it's an oil market, so there's definitely opportunity to be had. There's also a very, very high Gini coefficient in Angola. You know, I think it's one of the most expensive places to pay for a hamburger and a cold beer.
Which is crazy.
Crazy, yeah. You spend a month's salary on a beer and a burger. You know.
There's a very interesting company in Angola that's caught my attention over the last 18 months or so, Angola Cables. They're investing heavily in undersea fiber infrastructure. They're building a cable to
Fortaleza.
Brazil. That's right, and then they're going to be extending that down, possibly on their own or through one of the other cables. I think it's Ace or Wax, mm-hmm. into Cape Town, and they're positioning themselves as a kind of a hub for telecommunications infrastructure in the region, which has traditionally been South Africa's.
Correct. Again, you know, the interesting part there is the connection to Brazil.
Yeah.
So, in other words, we're looking at a Lusophone syndicate, if you like,
mm-hmm.
that's busy being formed, or a consortium that concentrates on extending the Portuguese influence or Portuguese language influence across across the continent. It'll be interesting to see if they connect up to Mozambique or not.
Yeah, a couple of countries in the way.
Yeah,
one of them is Zimbabwe, of course.
And, of course.
There's been some great political change in Zimbabwe recently. Yeah. Your thoughts on that country?
I see Strive Masirio is what Forbes has reckoned is the richest man in Africa besides Dangote.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I think he's on the front cover, I think, of Forbes this month.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and if you think of Econet starting up as a very much a small player.
Yes.
And the investment in telecommunications in Africa has become substantial. Now they're coming to 21st Century Systems. I think they've been sold now. I can't remember exactly. At Alex and the company, the guys there. They because they were in Zimbabwe, because they were isolated, they saw a gap for SAP implementation, for instance. And they got some very clever Zimbabwean guys together. And they formed the company. And their focus was delivering SAP implementations in really difficult African environments that nobody else wanted to touch. Built a very successful business out of that. You know, so there's, I think, you know, Zimbabwe, is it going to grow? Well, they've had the benefits of a good education system. If you look at South Africa, a lot of Zimbabwean people here that have got picked up skills, built relationships, and are going to be taking them back or leveraging them via South Africa to do this. So the Zimbabwean president was down here a couple of weeks ago with a very specific request for investment. So, you know, I think the still a bit early days, to be honest. I think there's a lot of people that'll take a bit of a wait and see attitude. Is the new dispensation in Zimbabwe going to make a difference? And if so, well, then I think there's a lot of opportunity to be had.
Mm.
You know, Zimbabwe's got a rich culture, a lot of people that are well educated, strong technology affinity, and a strong diaspora.
Yeah,
great ingredients.
And I was interested to see that the new Zimbabwean government is talking up potential aggressive privatization process.
As I said, we'll have to wait and see what happens in that. Everybody, I mean, if that happens, I mean, you know, that's just going to open floodgates.
Yes,
you know.
Yes. So let's turn to South Africa. It's fair to say, I assume that South Africa is the most developed ICT market on the continent. Are the growth drivers here quite different?
Yes, it's a far more sophisticated environment. So if you look at the size of the market in terms of the actual size, South Africa spends around $15 billion a year on technology, ICT. There's a sophistication that if you look at the banking environment and the use of e-services and internet and, you know, those kind of technologies, even if you look at home affairs and the collaborating with the banks to develop IoT basic services, or that is on the government side. If you look at the retail environment, also becoming much more competitive from a technology adoption point of view. Manufacturing, go down to the Volkswagen plant down in Port Elizabeth, very, very strong robotics component operating there. So South Africa, very, very looks a lot more like a developed country when it comes to technology adoption in many cases than in other areas.
Mm.
Or the rest of Africa. Kenya catching up very quickly. You know, South Africa should not be complacent. And I think that's where the whole regulatory and political environment starts to influence.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to, you know, I think that needs to be addressed to make the environment we've got an advantage and we need to sustain it.
Let's talk about the political situation in South Africa for a moment. There's a new president of the ANC, Cyril Ramaphosa. The rand has strengthened substantially on the back of his election. There's also, certainly many people say that there's been a bit of an investment strike by big corporate South Africa. How much has that investment strike, if it's actually occurred, affected IT spending in South Africa? If South African companies were to unleash that spending, what impact could it have on the IT sector? And just broadly, Mark, what is the improving confidence outlook mean for the sector?
Duncan, I think there's been a lot of conservatism, especially in the large commercial sector. There's been a conservative approach to investment in technology. It's been technology keeping the lights on a lot more. You know, 70% of the spend goes to keeping the lights on, 30% to innovation and new initiatives. I think that's going to be changing quite substantially. If South Africa's positioning improves, I think there's a lot of pent-up demand. People have been hanging on to stuff for a while, and there is some pent-up demand. Is it going to be substantial? I think then what mitigates that is the business case. In the old days, technology was bought for technology's sake. Now technology has to have a very, very strong business underpinning. And if that's not there, the companies don't invest. You know, they've got to be able to see, if I'm spending $10 here, what is the $100 I'm going to get back on the bottom line or in the profit line? You know, and I think that is going to be, that offsets some of the technology for technology's sake discussion. Also, the looking at net new technologies, you know, if you look at the AI type stuff, if you look at the Internet of Things type investment, next generation security, there's certain things that they're going to have to spend on the security side. But also, if the consumer, reaching the consumer and reaching these markets becomes far more important now. And I think a lot of the spend is going to be directed in that into that area.
John, before we wrap up, I'd like to talk a bit about cloud computing, which I know is a passion area of yours. In fact, we spent the whole last podcast talking about Microsoft Azure coming, data centers coming to South Africa.
Right.
So let's touch on that again. It's been a few months. Microsoft has started to spin up some of those Azure services locally. I've noticed my OneDrive access has improved dramatically in the last few weeks. But how significant is it that Microsoft is establishing these data centers here in South Africa, with Amazon reportedly planning to build its own as well?
Okay, so I think there's probably two big areas we want to talk about there. So first, got to be careful with Amazon. They've built edge node access in South Africa, but their actual data centers are based out of the Middle East for this region. So that's
for now.
But yeah, Bahrain and the UAE for now. They, as far as I know, have no plans to break ground in South Africa.
Oh, that's interesting, because they were quoted, I think, in the Sunday Times about a month ago, saying that they are keen to look at this market to build data centers.
They are keen to look at it. It's something they review on a regular basis. But as far as I know, and I've been known to get things wrong, but as far as I know, they have no immediate plans to build that infrastructure here. The Middle East facilities are expected to service the region for the time being. But a couple of implications of having big providers in the region. And you've got to bear in mind that a Microsoft South African data center is still an offshore data center for the rest of Africa. So, but the presence in the region has a couple of effects. First, it really encourages take up among customers. We talked about this before. Tackles a lot of the privacy concerns, some of the access and latency concerns, that kind of thing. So that matters. It's also having pretty major effect on the local suppliers. We're seeing big shifts in allegiance, in strategy. Which correlate very closely to these announcements. So inevitably, there is a change. But one of the things that I think we've been pretty confident about is that more and more cloud revenues will be driven through the channel. And in many cases, that'll be a local channel. So that as enterprises embrace multi-cloud platforms, start to work with multiple providers, there will be a very important role for cloud brokers, for integrators, for development partners. So that means there are tremendous opportunities, and having the likes of Microsoft in country and the likes of Amazon on the continent absolutely will encourage that. It will also mean attrition for those who don't adapt. So there will be some casualties, but overall the impact across the market will be pretty profound and in many cases positive.
Great. Well, on that positive note, gentlemen, thanks so much for talking to Tech Central today. Mark Walker is, as I look for my notes, Associate Vice President of IDC, while John Tullett is Research Manager for IT Services at IDC as well.
Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Duncan.